Going to start a new sermon series this week. It's going to be a 7-part series. So it's dealing with the 7 statements of Jesus Christ found in the Gospel of John, on where he makes the I am statements. And some powerful words and some powerful doctrine comes out of this. And I think the challenge for us is to take what is said there in all of its encompassing authority and power, and then to digest it in a way that we can apply it to our daily lives. Because the statements that are made are monumental. They're huge. And sometimes we can get overblown with what he's actually saying there. All right, so the first one that he states is found in John 6, I am the bread of life. I'm bread of life. Okay, so that's where we're going to start this week. And before you ever get to John to understand what he's saying, you do have to back up a little bit, all the way back to Exodus 3. And we have a guy who was born of the nation of Israel, and then due to circumstances beyond his control, he was raised as a prince of Egypt. And then because of his temper and because of his, you know, he was a Israelite and an Egyptian at the same time, he saw what was going on to his own nation of blood and how the nation that raised him treated those people, and then he killed a slave master, and then he spent 40 years out and tending sheep. And we find him out tending sheep, and it says there, and the Lord comes to Moses. We know the story very well. It says, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their slave masters, for I know their sorrows. Now, you can make a whole sermon series out of that statement right there, that God knows, understands our sorrows. He hears our cries. He hears our prayers. All right? And he is coming to the aid and rescue of his people. And he's coming to the person who will lead that rescue effort. And he says, so I have come down to deliver them out of the hands of the Egyptians and bring them up from a land that is good and large to a land that is flowing with milk and honey. So he's going to take them where they are held in slavery and captivity, and he's going to put them in the promised land that was promised to them. And Moses is the leader, the earthly leader, the impetus of that movement there. And it says that he's talking to Moses still. Now, come now, therefore, and I will send you, Moses, to Pharaoh, the most powerful man, God-alike figure on earth. And I'm going to send you, someone who can barely talk in public because of a speech impediment. I'm going to send you to go confront the most powerful man with the most powerful army on the face of this earth, who has been holding these people for generations after generations in slavery. And you're going to go there and tell him that he's to let the Israelites go free. And Moses asks God a very pointed question. When I go, now, but I want you to understand who the audience is that the statement is made to. Because he says, when I go and I come to the children of Israel, to your people, and I say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you to set you free, to lead the effort for you to come and be led out of slavery. And they ask, who sent you? What's his name? What do I say to them? Now, I need you to understand who he's asking on behalf. Because when we hear the story, we know what Pharaoh's answer is going to be, right? Is he going to let free a whole nation of free labor going to go for free? Absolutely not. You understand their economy is built on slavery, right? And if you remove that free labor, something has to replace it, or else everything shuts down. Sometimes we forget that there's a financial world going on, even back in biblical times. I mean, these men were responsible for that. And if you think about just removing that whole segment out of the economy, a whole free labor just pulled out of there, we understand what Pharaoh's answer is going to be. But sometimes we don't think about when Moses goes to the Israelites, are they just going to say, where have you been? We've been waiting on you, man. Get up there and do it. They're probably going to have some questions for him. And it's all going to come down to, who do you think you are? And who do you think sent you to do this on our behalf? Because if it goes bad, what's going to happen to the people that he's speaking on their behalf? You think things are going to get better? It's going to get worse. And then there's this statement that God says to Moses, and he says, I am who I am. In other words, I have been here forever. That doesn't make sense, does it? There is no beginning with God, with Jesus Christ, with the Holy Spirit. They are not created beings. The devil is a created being. There's a starting point for the devil. And we know there's an ending point to the devil. But there is no beginning point to God. And what he's saying is, I am the great I am. And that is spoken in present because he has always been and will always be present. You understand what I'm saying? And he says, thus say to the children of Israel, I am sent you to me. It sent me to you. I am is who sent Moses to the Israelites. But you understand who the care and who the answer is prepared for. It's prepared for the nation of Israel, the believers. You understand what I'm saying? So when we start to look into these I am statements, you have to understand that Jesus is speaking the very same vocabulary that God spoke in the days to Moses. It's the very same. And what he's saying is that I understand what Pharaoh's response is going to be, but here's what you need to say to the believers. And when we talk about the I am statements, those are being said to everybody. But the understanding, the care and the understanding is going to happen with the believers. It has to. And what we need to also understand is that the same God that spoke to Moses and said, I'm the great I am. I always have been. I always will be. Nothing can stand up against me because I am the great I am. And if I just blink an eyelash, Pharaoh's gone. And in fact, in this story, Pharaoh's days were already gone. They were numbered. He just didn't know it. It was just getting to the point where his days were gone. And we know that all the things that he pours on Pharaoh and how he delivers and how he rescues and gets the Israelites to the promised land, that is the same God that we're talking about today. It's the same God with the same power, with the same authority. And he's speaking the same language through Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Help me out back there, will you? All right. Whew. Everything's breaking this morning. So when we enter... Nope, not there yet. Go back. There we go. All right. So when we enter the Gospel of John in the sixth chapter is where we're going to pick up the first I am statement. And I need you just to give you some background about what's going on there. Because this is important to get into the reference, into the state of mind. And I don't know how much you have read the Gospel of John. Anytime there's a new Christian that I start dealing with, I always encourage them to start their biblical studies in John. Just an excellent place. It is the book of love. It presents Jesus Christ. It presents him. We talk about his manhood, we talk about his deity, but we concentrate on the love that just pours out of Jesus Christ. So it's just a magnificent book. But if you study the book of John, there's a time gap between chapter 5 and chapter 6. A lot of times, it just rolls on with the story in some of these chapters. And you understand that these guys didn't write these books with chapter and verses, right? I mean, they were written just long. We scholars years and years ago, when they made the Bible, they put them into chapters and verses, okay? They break it in and make it easy. So there's a time gap here between chapter 5 and chapter 6. And when we pick up in chapter 6, we find Jesus Christ teaching as he always does. He's on the seashore. And we talk about the feeding of the 5,000 because a large crowd showed up and it was getting late in the day and they weren't going to be able to go home because it was going to get dark on them and they were probably going to be there. And then they start worrying about what are we going to do with these people? They're going to start getting hungry. And then pretty soon they're going to be what Ariane calls when I get really, really hungry, hangry, that I'm so hungry I'm getting angry kind of thing. Sometimes when I'm in a bad mood, Ariane will ask me, what have you had to eat today? Like, I haven't eaten enough, so let's pour some carbohydrates down your body and make you a nice person again, all right? Nothing a milkshake can't solve, all right? Okay, so when we talk about the feeding of the 5,000, that's what's going on there, is that he's been teaching, you know, the miracle, you know, Andrew finds the boy, and they feed, actually, the estimate is around 20,000 people with just one little boy's lunch. And in fact, there's so much left over that they start taking the scraps and putting it into barrels and stuff. So here we have just an amazing miracle where Jesus feeds around 20,000 people, 5,000 men, up to 15,000 women and children. And just an amazing miracle. And people are just for sure that this is the next king of Israel who will come and will root out those crazy Romans and take over the throne and all this stuff. And Jesus starts to feel that they're going to start proclaim him as the earthly king. And then he does what he does so many times, is he starts to recede. And then he sends the disciples out on their boat. And then he goes in and he starts to pray. And then as the disciples are out on the boat, a storm starts to work up, right? Okay, they start to get afraid. And just when they didn't think they couldn't get any more scared, Jesus starts walking across the water to them. And then they really start to get scared. And he says, hey, don't get scared, it's me. And then he gets on the boat with them. And then as soon as he gets on the boat, it's almost like they're on the seashore. Okay, so that's what's leading up to what's going on here. And then the next morning is where we pick up. And it says that when they all woke up and they started moving around, they noticed that Jesus is not with them and the disciples are gone too. So they search them out. They said, well, they must have went across the sea. So they get in their boats and they start to go over there. And as they're getting over there, Jesus starts to see this crowd coming around. And so here he is again, surrounded, and he starts to teach. And the people come to him. And when they find him there, they have a question. And this is where I want you to concentrate real quick. Knowing what has happened, what they've just seen, what they've just experienced. And as they get to the other side, I want you to really concentrate. Put yourself in their sandals and put yourself in what they are thinking there. The question that they come to is, Rabbi, when did you come here? Because I need you to understand is that when we go to Jesus Christ so many times with our questions and with our concerns, it's asking on our behalf for our understanding. Now, is that wrong? No, don't mishear me this morning, okay? But I really need you to understand, because what our job is here is that once you have become a believer and you are regenerated, you're a born-again Christian, you have that experience where the Holy Spirit comes and starts to live inside of you, then it's our job to get you through the process, the continued process, the ever-going process of sanctification. And that is becoming more and more saint-like, which is a very theological way of saying that you're going to go through troubles and tribulations through life, and you need to go through them more and more mature each time you go through a tribulation. That is the Christian walk. And now sometimes we go backwards a little bit. I get it. You might be in a place right now where you're going backwards. I get it. We all go through there. That is being human. Jesus understands that. He still loves us. He still deals with us in those times. But our obligation as a church, and our obligation as individual Christians and as Christian families, is to understand that it's my job to do it according to the Bible, to get through the trials and tribulations better and stronger each and every time, so that Jesus can get the glory of our growth through Jesus Christ. All right? So there's just a real quick question, and let this settle on you. I've said it before. When you get through a tribulation, ask yourself, am I better or am I bitter? Did I get bitter or did I get better? That's how you judge whether or not you got through the thing right. Okay? So many times when we come to Jesus Christ, like I just said earlier, just a minute ago, is we come on our terms. So when they come to Jesus, they are asking him questions for their understanding. Now, here is the rub. Here's where I want you to concentrate real quick, because I know that coming to Jesus and working our way through this thing called faith and through the understanding and through doctrine and all that fancy talk, that's important stuff. But so many times we get bogged down on making sure that I understand this. I haven't gotten this yet. I can't move on. And so many times in the Christian walk, what's going to have to happen is that you're just going to have to say, that just doesn't make 100% sense to me, but the Bible says it, so it's true, and I've got to take a step out on faith and keep moving forward. Because if you take a step in faith and you keep moving forward, sometimes when you get a little bit down the journey, you go, aha, it makes sense now. When you're asking for something to happen in your life and you are really, really expressing to God how much this thing means to you and just how great this would be for your life if this happened and just how great this would be if he could just make this possible, and boy, we just concentrate and we just pray on this thing here, and like Peter and like Paul, we get told no. And then, boy, we just keep on praying. And he went to the Lord three times, and the Lord told him three times, no. And then he was like, okay, it's not going to happen. But so many times, we keep asking, I don't understand. I don't know why this is not happening for me. Why aren't you letting this come to me? Why aren't you acting yet? And what God is saying, take a step in faith, and then you'll see the answer. Because in my life, I have seen where, when I look back throughout the years, there were some things that I thought that I really, really wanted for my life that didn't happen. I didn't understand it at the time. It wasn't the best thing that ever happened to me in the world. But if you can keep moving forward and you say, well, that didn't make sense to me, but I got faith that Jesus Christ is going to take care of me and he's always going to be there for me. And sometimes we just don't always get what we want, but that doesn't mean he doesn't love me and he's not there for me and he didn't die for me. So I'll just keep moving forward. And then a couple years down the road, you get into something and you go, so that's why. That's why you didn't allow that to happen. Because if that happened, there's no way I could be where I am right now. And where I am right now is so much better than I ever thought I could be. And it's nowhere what I would have taken myself. And in fact, if I'd have been where I wanted to be, it probably would have taken me in a direction that probably would have been hard on me, broken my family up, just been a disastrous affair. Because that's usually where Aaron leads Aaron, to a disastrous affair, just to be honest with you, to trouble. If you're honest with yourself, there's been times where you really, really wanted something, and you pushed, and you pushed, and you pushed, and you got it, and when you got it, you're like, I really don't want this anymore. This wasn't as great as I thought it was going to be. And in fact, this is bad. And sometimes we push and push and push, and then when we get there, we think, this is horribly, because now it's a financial matter, and now I can't get out of it, and now I'm strapped financially, and that's affecting everything in my life. And boy, if I just would have stepped back, and if you just let God push it, and you'll take a step out in faith, the answers will come. The answers will come. But so many times we keep pushing for the answers on our timeline and according to our understanding. And Jesus says to them, right after they ask this, like, boy, how'd you get here? And you have to understand, okay? just kind of the, I don't know, maybe it's just me. I'm kind of different and crazy a little bit. But, you know, they ask him, how'd you get here? And, you know, he wants to say, well, I walked across the sea in the middle of a storm on top of the water. That's how I got here. And then I found my disciples out floating around in the middle of it, and I hopped in the boat with them, and we were magically on shore. That's the story, you know. But that's not what he says. He says, most assuredly, this is what I say to you. You seek me not because you saw the signs. Now listen to what he's saying here. This is critically important. It's not that you're here because of the miracles. Understand that. Think about what they just saw, what they just experienced, what he did for them. He took a little boy's lunch that his mother probably gave him and said, hey, go have a good day. And then Jesus Christ, with that little bitty lunch, was able to feed 20,000 people. With so much left over, they had a store it in barrels and all that stuff. And then he says, you're not here because of all the miracles that you've seen. That's not what you're here. You're here because I filled your bellies. You know the old adage? What's the way to a man's heart? Through his stomach, right? If you want a dog to come around forever, what do you got to do? How many times? If you want a future step or a future son-in-law, how many times you got to feed him? Right, Alan? Feed him one time and he's there forever. I remember Alan came home one time and I was there. I think I was the only one there. And he was asking me, like, where's Pete? I was like, I don't know. Where's Arian? I don't know. He's going down the line. And he was like, what do you know? I was like, buddy, I don't live here. I just eat here. I don't know why you're asking me these questions. I'm here for the same reason you are. Usually dinner's served around this time. That's exactly why I'm here, bud. And we've said this before. If you want them to come, what do you got to do? Feed them. It's not rocket science. Because here's the deal. If you boil it down, what we're driven by is what we get for ourselves in this life. You understand what he's saying? He's putting it in a nice way. You know what he's saying? You know why you're here? You're selfish, greedy, self-centered. You only want what's good for you. And he's summing up our Christian life. I hate to say that, but he's summing up my Christian life. He's summing up all of our Christian lives. You know how I know that? Because when things don't go wrong, guess what starts getting really, really tested? It's biblical in James 1, right? My faith. Of all the things he's brought me through, of all the miracles I've seen with my own very eyes and I've studied in the Bible, when I don't get my belly as full as I want, my wallet's not as fat as I want it, and my 401k's hurting a little bit, stock market's going down, I'm like, oh, what am I going to do in this life, okay? We were at the Cardinal ball game yesterday, and they had the fire truck pull up, not because there was a fire, but because the guys had something shooting out, and it was shooting out this water, just like 300 feet of just mist, and all these kids were out there dancing around in it because it was about 97 degrees. I looked at Kevin Oglesby, and I said, you know you're in a first world when they're doing that right there. Wasting water so little kids can go out and be cool and play, right? And it was just going down into the sewer down there. Nobody thought anything about it. They don't do that in all worlds, in all countries. They can't afford to do that. They walk miles and miles for water on top of their head, right? They got a jug here, jug here, jug here, jug on their foot, and they're hopping for, right? That's what they're doing. And it's not... And it's because they've got to do it. And that's what he's saying. He's saying, if you really want to hear some teaching, what Jesus is saying, you came to me, remember? Sometimes that's what I say to people when they call me up, say, I need to talk to you about something, and it's bad news. I usually say, I want you to understand, you came to me. You're asking for my advice, because this might hurt a little bit. So that's what Jesus is saying. You're seeking me, so you came to me, so let me tell you what's going to happen here. You're here because I fed your bellies. And if you are honest with yourself, sometimes our faith is just 100% selfish. And he says, don't labor for food which perishes. Don't worry about what's going on in this life. Don't get so caught up in how much money you're making or what's going on with your career. Think about and concentrate on spiritual things, and then I'll take care of the rest, is what he's saying. He's setting the premise of his teaching right here. And the premise is that I have shown you things that can't possibly happen on earth. And then you show up and say, Jesus, we're all kind of hungry, bud. It's morning. You left us. What's going on here, bud? And then you know what he's saying? Let's get down to some real teaching. You're not here really for the spiritual needs. You're here for the physical needs. And if we're honest with ourselves, we want our physical needs met, and we want them met now. And they said to him, what shall we do that we can do the works of God? Okay? And Jesus tells them, this is the work of God. And he just lays it out. That you believe in him who he sent. So what's that telling you? We're back to that very first point. Is that if you want to see some miraculous things happen in your life, Don't demand answers. Don't be a Job. Remember, Job says, I've got a list of questions, and I demand an answer. And God said, before I answer him, answer me some questions, Job. When were you when I made the mountains? When were you when I made the seas and the heavens? Where were you? Put you in your place real quick. And this is what he's saying. Is so many times we want answers. We want it now. We want our bellies filled. We want relaxation. We want to be comfortable because that's what we deserve. And what Jesus Christ is saying, you don't want what you deserve and you won't get what you deserve because I went to the cross for each and every one of you. And it's time that you start believing on me, not only for the physical things in this world, but start concentrating on how we can make a spiritual difference in a physical world. That's why Jesus Christ did not come on top of a tank coming down through and just guns a-blazing and just shooting Romans and killing them and just drive over the top of the cross that they were going to crucify him on, give up on Golgotha and go, woohoo, and start shooting a machine gun. I know that sounds absolutely crazy and you think I'm nuts, right? But that's really sometimes the Jesus that we want inside of our hearts. That's who we want. You know what Jesus did? He came and he said, I'm here to give everything I can give. And that includes my life. I lay it down for you. Nobody can take it from me. I lay it down. You don't have to pull my arm. I stretch the arm out so you can put the nail in it. Get the other one in there. Get in there real good. Make sure I hang right. Make sure I die because that's why I came to die for each and every one of us. And that's the Jesus, a Jesus who came with love. To conquer the world with love, not with hate, with love and with service. But in order to do that, we have to be followers in that same kind of mission and work. And what he's saying is that we can't cure a world that is broken and do it on physical needs alone. That's important. But we have to change the world through spiritual work. And they said, well, and listen. And you say, well, these people are dense, man. How thick are their skulls? But we are right here with them. And then they say, well, what kind of sign are you going to show us that we can believe that you're Jesus Christ, the Savior sent by God to be the Almighty Messiah? That's what they're asking. Because you know what? Moses brought manna down from heaven and fed us all the time. You can almost hear like a negotiation going on to where they're trying to trick him into doing stuff. Feed us again and we might believe you. You see that? You see what's going on there? Show us a sign. I just showed you a miracle yesterday. Now we're back to what he said. You're not here because of the miracles. You're here to get physical needs out of me, to make this life better. Because we're selfish and we want it now. We want glorification now. You know what the hardest thing to do is preach glorification to the present world. You know why? Because glorification does not come in this world. It comes in the next. This world is about glorifying Jesus Christ. You want your crown? Wait till the next life. You won't get it in this life. Jesus Christ gets glorified in this life. He's going to get glorified in the next life too. But that's where we get our glory because it shines off of him. See what I mean? That's doctrine right there. That's true scripture. That's true Bible right there. So they're shooting back at him. Show us a sign. Show us a miracle. Feed us. Be honest with yourself. When Jesus is prodding you to become more spiritual and more spiritual understanding, Aaron Phelps negotiates with him. Show me some love. Show me some miracles. Show me some now, and you might get some faith from me. You know, and look what he says. Most assuredly, I say to you, Moses had... Now, here's what he's saying. This is the kind of stuff that got him crucified. Moses had absolutely nothing to do with the bread that came out of heaven. Isn't that great? He had nothing to do with it. You know how much you have to do with your own salvation? Nothing. You know how much you have to do with your own success? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You know how much you had to do with being born... an American or with privilege or whatever kind of thing you think you might or might not have. It was all by the grace of God. That's it. That's it. The breaks you got in life are all gifts from God. And if you look at life the right kind of way, the stumbling blocks you get in life are gifts from God too. That's tough gospel, but that's the real gospel right there. And he's telling them that for The bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. You know why he says that he is the bread of life? Because he is the most essential thing in life. Bread is the staple of most... Now listen, this is a little ironic coming from a preacher who has a gluten allergy, all right? All right? But bread is the most important staple in most diets and in every diet across the world. And that's what Jesus Christ is saying. I am the most important ingredient in your diet. I keep you alive. I give you sustenance. I am life. I am your prayers. I am your salvation. I am your life. Without me, you are dead. No pathway to God. No chance for cure. No correction. Nothing can happen without Jesus Christ. You understand what he's saying? He's saying, I am the bread of life. Without, if the wheat crops failed, this world, read about it. Read about what Joseph brought those people through. You want to understand what need is? Go through a famine when there's nothing to eat and no hope to eat and no ground to grow anything on. And then they ask, and it's starting to sink in a little bit, and this is where we need to get, is where we say, I truly need this bread. I truly need this bread to feed me spiritually and get me concentrated on spiritual things and spiritual growth. Because you can't have physical health without spiritual health. That's the bottom line. And you can't be doing a good job in whatever career you got. You can't be a good father. You can't be a good mother. You can't be a good grandparent. You can't be a good sibling. You can't be a good employee unless you are spiritually healthy. Give us this day our daily bread, right? You ready? Jesus said to them, he said, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never know hunger again and shall never thirst again. Do you understand what he's saying? Do you understand what he's saying there? If you get right with me and you get it on a spiritual level with spiritual health, you will never know hunger anything because your mind is set on the perfect thing. I will be there for you in all cases, and you will have understanding. The first question you ask me, what's going on? Make me understand what's happening. I will answer those questions because of your faith and because I will always be there. I will never let you down. You can never be separated from my love. I will always be there. I am the bread that keeps you alive. I am your salvation. I am your pathway to heaven, your pathway to God, your pathway to forgiveness. Without me, there is nothing. And until we come to the point to where we truly live life, understanding that Jesus Christ is the only thing that we need, then we will truly never live. And then he sums it up with this. I am the bread of life. Think about this. How much we toil, how much we struggle on the things of this life. And he says, the manna that you talked about, your forefathers ate it, and where are they now? They still died, right? And here's what you're going to need to understand is when you struggle through life and you prod and cheat or whatever we do and fight and scratch and all the things that we try to get out of this life, guess what happens in the end? Regardless of how you do it, you're still going to die, right? But only those who have eaten Jesus Christ in his flesh will ever truly know life. That's the gospel. So I'm going to have you stand this morning. An amazing statement. Simple words with weight and power to every one of them. He basically says, I am the bread of life. And here's what we need to understand. He is 100% what we need in 100% of every single case. He's the answer to everything. He's the motivation for everything. He's the power behind every success in your life. Jesus Christ is the bread that keeps us alive. Without him, we will die. We will become malnourished. We will know famine. We will know need. But with him, you will live the life that he has planned for you. So if you're going through a struggle right now, here's the deal. I know you're wanting material, earthly things sometimes, but Jesus says, he's saying, come to me and understand me on a spiritual level, and I'll take care of everything else. Come to me with all your needs, and I'll take care of them. And if you're on top of the world right now, come down and let's proclaim that it's because Jesus Christ is the answer to everything. And if you've never known Jesus Christ as your Savior, don't wait another day to understand who this man is and make the best decision you ever can in your life. I open up the altars to you this morning.